Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Fortress Comic News, episode 357. I am one of your hosts, Chris, alongside my co-host, Mike. What's going on, Mike?
Nothing much. Had some exciting news over the last week or so. Finally, some Fantastic Four stuff coming down the pipeline. It's happening, finally. Other than that, not a whole lot. I haven't bought any exciting comic stuff. Haven't read. I did start watching Jujutsu Kaisen, so that's a pretty cool show.
Oh, nice!
I heard it's pretty good. First couple episodes are weird. It's like kind of like they're like Jujutsu mages or warlocks or something. I forget what they call themselves. It's like I don't know. They're like it's like magic powers and monsters. But also kind of like, I don't know, kung fu. I don't know. It's pretty cool shit. I'm just watching it like this is enjoyable. Also, Chris, do you have HBO Max?
Yeah.
There's this new anime that came out on. It's like Adult Swim, Toonami, and it's the first episode's out on Max right now, and I can't remember the name for the life of me. You might be finding it right now. There's only one episode out, but it's basically just about I like read the description and I was like bored one night and it was like, it says like ninjas. And I was like, oh, hell yeah. So I threw it on and it's like, it's like John Wick style where the guy used to be like a ninja and he's in hiding and they come after him and he like kills everybody that comes after him.
Ninja Kumai.
Yeah. Dude, the fight scenes are insane. They're probably the coolest fight scenes I've ever... And they're, like, so brutal. I mean, they're using swords and shit, just, like, slicing each other up. Yeah, if you watch it, you gotta let me know, because it's insane how good it is.
It's so funny to me that, like, Crunchyroll and all that came out, and they just dominated anime.
Yeah.
And now, like, all of these other services are trying so hard to get whatever they can.
They're like, we can do it. But this one was... I, like, threw the first episode on, and, like, it's, like... kind of graphic because they like go after his family because he's like in hiding now and it's crazy. Yeah, just you gotta watch it. I watch the fight scenes and I'm like, why aren't all fight scenes in anime this good? Because the like choreography was just amazing. I was like, dude, I watched it and I was like, man, why wasn't Naruto this good? Which is like saying a lot. It's you gotta watch it. It's crazy. But yeah. Oh, we do have an interview today, everybody. Wells Thompson will be on. We're going to be talking about Mechaton, right?
Yes.
It's going to be coming out through Scout now, I believe. Or
we got a Kickstarter for Volume 1.
Kickstarter for Volume 1, because there's five issues.
Yes,
out.
I believe it goes to Scout after that.
Yeah, so really love that story. So we'll talk with him a little bit later. It's a really fun story. And... yeah, with that, I guess we got quite a bit of news. So why don't we jump into it?
Let's do it.
Some good news about Invincible. We originally thought was this second part of part two season or second part of season two, which if it was coming out in fall, would have pretty much meant season three at that point.
Yeah.
Is not coming out in the fall now. Amazon Prime announced a trailer for the second part, and they said it's a release date March 14th. Which is considerably closer than the fall of this year.
Yeah, I was trying to find the initial reports that said fall.
Yeah.
And, you know, that shit happens. Like, it gets buried in the internet.
Right.
And every time you search this now, it's the new release date.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was reports I remember very vividly because being very upset that's like, why am I waiting till fall for half of a season?
Mm-hmm.
You should have delayed the whole thing.
Yeah.
But that's not true, Mike. It's only a few weeks away.
Only a few weeks. Yeah, because I remember talking with people about it. They're like, what the fuck? Why is it taking so long? Yeah, I mean, from the trailer, we see Mark away from Earth for quite a bit longer, having to come back and deal with the parasitic shit going on Earth. March 14th. There we go.
Yeah, definitely more Guardian the Globe stuff going through. Like, yeah, it's building up to a lot of cool moments from the comics. I have a feeling... this will end with the Vultramites coming to Earth finally. And season three will be that big battle.
Yeah. I have to think the last episode, I think Conquest is going to land on Earth.
Yeah.
And we'll definitely. Be like, oh, and then roll credits because they know what's coming next. Because I cannot wait for that part.
Yeah. So I'm really excited for it to actually get going. But
yeah.
Just happy that news is not true because
yeah.
That would have sucked.
Yeah, I was like, what the hell? And it didn't even seem like a place to stop the season anyways. We were like, yeah, full season. And then, nope. Just kidding. Delicious in Dungeon episode 7. So I did watch this episode. I will say, little fun, little intro there where they brought back that party from a few episodes ago that I didn't think we were going to see again. So that was pretty cool. To like see that there's like healers down in the dungeon that like heal people and they're like, okay, now give me money. We found you guys.
Money, please. Yeah.
And then they're like, don't tell them about the other people because then they'll die again and then we'll get more money from them. We heal them.
It's like, yeah, oh, it's okay. Phenomenal. Like a corporate cleric.
Yeah. He's like, whoa. Don't tell them too much info because we want them to die again further in the dungeon, then we get more money. It's like, oh my god.
Yeah, I love this episode. First, we learn that like magic comes from hair,
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
But basically, like taking care of your hair and having long hair is that like something to help with magic. So the dwarf who like doesn't like magic,
yeah,
never cleans his beard, which let me tell you, Mike, is a man of beardly proportions.
Yep.
That's disgusting.
Yeah. You got to clean the beard. You got to clean it. Come on. That whole interaction is really funny, though.
The whole montage where they're cleaning his beard and everything is fantastic.
Yeah. The I would say the I don't know, there's a lot of cool things happening up. So the funniest part was when the sirens start singing and he just like starts screaming above them and they just like are sitting there on the rock like tired of his shit. They're just like, okay, we're going back in the water. That being said, a whole water episode.
Yes.
Water four floors episode. Down. Yeah, which is pretty cool.
So we got barley porridge.
Yep.
That was the first dish. And then later on, they fight a giant squid.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of eating the squid like a normal person would,
yeah,
they decide to eat the parasites inside the squid and make parasite kebabs with squid sauce.
Yeah.
And our lead character eats one of the parasites raw and gets himself
gets a parasite. Imagine that. Yeah, it's also a lesson in eating raw fish.
Yeah, be safe with that.
Yeah, because it contains parasites. That's why you cook it.
On a side note.
Yeah.
So the local place where I get sushi.
Uh-huh.
Right. So it used to be like fully Japanese staff.
Yeah.
And I knew the people there pretty well. Like they saw me. They knew I was coming, knew what I wanted, all that stuff. Somewhere along the lines, people retired or left. I don't know. But now it's all people look like me.
Uh-huh.
Make and for sushi. Some reason, Mike, I just don't trust it anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. I never really see anybody looking like you behind the sushi. It's actually it's funny that you say that about sushi because I have a funny sushi story from this week. I just thought of it. Katie and I were out. It wasn't a Valentine's Day thing. We just after work Friday, there's a little sushi place around the corner here that we just grabbed food at quick for dinner. Nice. She got her sushi rolls. I ordered the sashimi dinner, which it's not something expensive. This place is like, I mean, it's good sushi. It's cheap. It's like 20 something bucks for the sashimi. I didn't want a lot of rice. And apparently because it was Valentine's this week, they thought, oh, and there is an option there. Sashimi for two. No. This is just the one dinner. So she gets her rolls and then they bring out this massive bowl, like the size of a basketball, Chris. And it's filled with ice and it has a giant rose sticking out of it. And like all my fish on top of this mountain of ice. And then they set it in front of me. This thing is so big that I couldn't even see Katie on the other side of the table. And as they brought it over, like everybody in the restaurant staring at us like, oh, look how sweet that is. I'm like, no, this is embarrassing as hell because like they brought it over and she wasn't going to eat it. She had her sushi that she wanted. She didn't want any of the sashimi. So I like sat there with this giant bowl with a rose sticking out of it, like eating the sashimi.
Just looking like Goku. Just,
yeah. While she just like watched, I like this flower is just poking up from the other side. Like you couldn't even see my head. It was so big. I was like, they're like, oh, this nice couple's going out for Valentine's. I'm like, no, I just really wanted dinner. And after it though, I was like, can I keep the rose? They're like, yeah. I kept
it. Didn't even give it to her. Just kept it for yourself.
No, I kept it. Come on. Yeah, it was a fun time. But
that's phenomenal.
Yep.
But yeah, Delicious Dungeon, another great episode. Like a lot of cool stuff going on.
Yeah.
It's
a really fun anime. I mean, they definitely grasp and understand, like, when they were talking, they mentioned a few cantrip names too.
Yeah.
Like water walking and stuff, the way they refer to it, that those are all like D&D spells. Like, so if you're a D&D nerd, this show's for you as well.
I will say this is like an anime trope that I don't really care for, but like the hysterical woman anime trope.
Oh yeah.
And it's just that whenever something happens, she's got to like fly off the handle and scream. And I'm just like, I'm really enjoying the show. Like, can you stop with that?
Yeah. I feel like that happens in every anime. There's always just a really screaming, whining character every time.
It's always one of the female characters too. That's what's always like connected with me is it's like a female character who just like screams off the top of her lungs. I'm just like,
yeah.
All right.
Yep. For me, it was like when I was trying to watch, Hero Academia, the main character cries like every episode. Like he just starts crying and bawling and like whining. And after a while, it's just like, I can't do another season of this shit. Like
that's one of those things where like my anime, that's why I think I prefer manga, because anime has these tropes that while manga does, like I can like sift it out as I'm reading.
Right.
And with anime, it's like they go over the top with it. And those are the things that really make me sit down and be like, I appreciate anime and I'm really loving this one in particular, but I don't understand how people just watch anime.
Right. Yeah. There has to be some other stuff involved there.
Yeah.
Movie news. So during the Super Bowl game, we got the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer, which right from the start, there is a theory online that they're going to release new trailers. And with every new trailer, they're going to have a different title, which I could see them doing something like that. Because in this Deadpool and Wolverine trailer, we only get to see Wolverine's shadow at the end of it.
Yeah, I don't know about that. That might cause too much confusion.
To what? To change the name?
To do a different name every time?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess they're not going with Deadpool 3 because that would confuse everybody if this is going to be part of the... If it's not like continuing in that universe anymore.
Well, because it seems to me watching it, this is more of a sequel to Loki.
Yeah. And yeah. Having the TVA very involved is kind of like, I saw that and I was like, I'm not so sure how I feel about it yet, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah. And I have a feeling that I think that this is going to be a Deadpool kills the Marvel Universe story.
I think so too. Yeah.
But instead of the Marvel Universe, it's just him like getting rid of all the Fox bullshit.
Yeah.
Because as you go through it, like Pyro shows up. I think there's Pyro right there.
Yep.
I believe Toad shows up at some point. Like there's a bunch of different characters that pop up throughout it. And then obviously Wolverine. So I think like the big fight is at first is going to be them, and then they have to come together. And then like that cloud there, that's got to be Galactus, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I think that's what they're going for. And I also throughout it, he's definitely going to be jumping from universe to universe to try to find the correct universe. Because we see like Patches Wolverine. And we see Weapon X Wolverine.
That's a different trailer than I saw for the Super Bowl, because the one they dropped during the Super Bowl was just like them talking to Deadpool, showing him like Captain America and stuff.
Yeah, so that the one I just showed, if you're listening, there's a video version of this. The one I just showed is the one they posted online after the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So they did the teaser for the Super Bowl and said, go here to watch the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I chose that. But yeah, I mean, this is obviously them. The TVA is going to give them their opportunity to prove themselves so they can join the main MCU. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see a bunch of cool variants. There's theories that like Patches is going to be played by Daniel Radcliffe.
Mm.
I've seen so many around, but
yeah, I think
it looks fun. I'll say that.
Yeah, it's definitely taking a fun direction. Yeah, whether or not they're gonna like use this to completely reboot or clean up everything, we'll find out.
I think they're gonna wipe out the Fox universe entirely, because you can even see, we had seen pictures that leaked of like Deadpool and Wolverine in front of the 20th Century Fox logo.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see in that trailer parts where it's like the Fox logo all destroyed behind them.
Yeah.
And so they're definitely like, I mean, it's a fucking Deadpool movie. So they're going to go over the top fourth wall and all that. It's going to be, I guarantee the plot's going to be like, we have to destroy this Fox universe so that we can start over at the, in the MCU.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. I'm wondering, besides like just Pyro, who, what other original actors are going to come back? Well, obviously Wolverine as well, but Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, I think we'll see a bunch. I'll be interested to see if the woman from the Marvels who is stuck in that universe is in this.
Oh,
and if she comes back with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have a prediction that Hugh Jackman, they kill all of his variants so that they can recast him.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I don't think we'll get the new Wolverine. Like, it wouldn't shock me if like the end credit thing is like you see the Wolverine costume or the hair or something.
Yeah, and you don't know who it is.
Because they want to make a big splash with that announcement. But
yeah. Or like them, like Deadpool looking at him like, who the fuck are you?
And then
roll credits or something, you know, like.
Exactly. But I don't think Hugh Jackman Wolverine's coming out of this alive.
No. Yeah, but I think it looks like a lot of fun. Obviously, we're going to be pumped for it. And along with Wolverine is yellow suit, it wasn't in our news here, but they released the X-Men 97 trailer this week, last week, on Disney Plus. So it's continuing. I don't know if you've watched it, but the trailer looks, it looks interesting. Like, it's not anything like, I mean, the animation is there just like the old school 97, like they definitely have the spot on animation, and some of the characters are very similar, like with voice acting and how they behave. The big takeaway from the trailer, Chris, is Magneto is talking about leading the X-Men now, and there's a scene where Wolverine's riding on the back of Gambit, and he uses his powers on Wolverine's claws to make them all purpley magic, and then he like jumps off his back, and it was like, yeah, that was pretty.
They're doing hot claws.
Yeah.
Oh my god. I just got significantly less excited for the show.
Yeah. So you watch the trailer and you're like, I mean, it's nothing groundbreaking. I mean, it looks like a 90s X-Men. You'll have to tell me what you think after it, because it's there's definitely some stuff going on.
Yeah, I'll have to watch it later, but that must have gotten lost in the news. There's so much shit that happened this week, man.
I know. So then the big thing that really dropped, and I feel like that's why this got buried, the X-Men 97 got buried. Marvel Studios announced on Valentine's Day with a weird piece of art, by the way, that was like half digital, half drawn. There it is. We have the cast of the Fantastic Four movie, everybody. We have Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic, as Pedro Pascal. Fucking love that choice. Sue Storm, the Invisible Woman, Vanessa Kirby. The only thing I've seen her in is Mission Impossible, the last couple movies, and she's really good. She plays like an arms dealer called like the White Widow or something like that. She's really good in that.
I've heard she's really good.
Yeah.
And I looked her up a little bit, and first of all, she is fucking gorgeous, but I've heard she's a really good actress too, and it's very fitting that her last name is Kirby.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Jack Kirby. Yeah. You haven't seen the new Mission Impossible movies at all with her?
I haven't seen anything past like Mission Impossible 3.
Oh shit. Okay. Yeah. Well, they get crazier and really good, but she's in a few of them. Yeah. Ben Grimm, the Thing. Yvonne Moss, Backrock. He's a really good actor. He's the one from the chef show that's out right now, The Bear. He's in The Bear, and he's really good. He's really like over the top. He has the best, like, if you watch that show, he really has a great attitude to play the Thing, I think. So,
see, I know him from, I believe he was in Andor. Yes.
Oh, okay.
He was in a 3-episode stint for Andor.
Yeah.
So that's where I know him from. And he's really good. And I found this out too randomly. First Jewish actor to play the Thing.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah. Good for him. That's, yeah. I mean, especially with the ties to the original comics, right? And
Ben Grimm is the Thing, Ben Grimm is the Thing.
Yeah, right.
Ben Grimm is Jewish. So
no, he's Jewish in the comics. Yeah. Johnny Storm, Human Torch, is Joseph Quinn, and I didn't recognize him, Chris, because he has long hair in the Stranger Things.
Yeah, he looks nothing like that character.
No, he looks nothing like the thrash metal guy from Stranger Things. I think this is great casting.
This is the one that has the breakout potential because I found his character in Stranger Things, like you grow to love his character, but his character was very annoying for a good chunk of that season to the point where I didn't like when he was around.
Yeah.
And then, so we'll see, but I think he's really talented and good.
Mm-hmm.
And this is his opportunity really to come out and like become a big star. Like if he kills this role, he's going to be huge.
He's getting a lot of work now. He's in the new Quiet Things trailer as well as my main character.
Yeah. Quiet people Things are really, he must be good to work with or something.
The Quiet Place, Quiet Things, whatever it's called.
And then that little robot, that's Herbie, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now there's speculation online because he's added to this image here that he is also in the movie,
which would be awesome.
So then immediately, like, the internet's never satisfied, we get this amazing news of like who's playing who.
Yeah, who's gonna,
and everybody's like, who's gonna voice Herbie?
Yeah.
And Alan Tudyk was my first choice.
Oh yeah. Oh, big time. Yeah, that would be perfect.
But I love everything about this cast, from Pedro Pascal down. I think Pedro has an opportunity here. It depends how this movie goes. Like, I don't want to judge too much in early reports on what their plan is for the movie, but if this movie is an actual like family movie with Pedro being the lead,
mm-hmm.
He has the opportunity to take up the Robert Downey Jr. role and kind of reinvent the MCU him as the top. Yeah.
Everybody would get behind him.
Yeah.
I will say, and the little thing of like Ben Grimm's character with the astronaut helmet, we are getting the original flying into space sun rays or radiation from the sun, like turning them into the Fantastic Four. We're not doing that bullshit with Josh Trank going into the negative zone.
So I never saw that movie.
Oh.
But I'm pretty sure that's the ultimate Fantastic Four origin.
It is.
And here I am. Here I am to tell you, Mike, it's a better origin.
It is, for sure. But it's not the classic origin.
I know, but it's a better
origin. Yeah, it is definitely cooler. But the way they did it in the last movie, definitely not as cool.
I didn't watch that movie. I'm going by the comic version. Yeah, I think the idea of them getting it from the negative zone is cooler.
It makes more
mostly because sense. For me, too, it brings in Annihilus, who was like top tier villain in my eyes.
Yeah.
So if you give me a Annihilus in any way, I'm in, but
no Dr. Doom announcement though.
I don't think he's in this movie.
That'd be okay. Or he's in the after credits scene. You got to save something for the credits.
Yeah. I'll be, if I had my way, they would go full original Fantastic Four and it would be Mole Man. And then you would do the after credits with Galactus so that Fantastic Four 2 could be Galactus.
Uh-huh.
And then that would set up Dr. Doom. Because you need Dr. Doom for Secret Wars.
I mean, they could do 5 movies of this easily.
Oh, yeah. But this is all, I mean, they're the big lead up for Secret Wars because all of their, everything they do kind of leads up to what Secret Wars is.
Yeah.
Starting with Dr. Doom being the big bad.
Yep. Cannot wait. I really thought this casting was solid.
I don't know, I was really happy when this came across for you. I mean, I'm excited for it too. I think between this and Deadpool, although I'm not a huge Deadpool fan, like the movie looks fun. And then this being announced, it's a bright future for the MCU. And then I was reading, Mike, that this is actually coming out months apart from Superman Legacy, if everything lines up correctly. So this will be the first movie to go head-to-head with James Gunn's new DCU.
It's going to be a great like few months for movies. 2025, right?
Yeah. Next year's going to be huge for all of this, and I'm really excited to get things back on track.
Yeah, I want to be excited about superheroes on the big screen again. I really do.
I want to be, I get excited still, but I want to be excited like I was in phase 2 and 3.
Yeah, exactly. You like want to go in and be like, I need to know what happens in this movie, you know?
Yeah, not I'll wait for it to come to Disney Plus. Excited.
Yeah, exactly. But all right, everybody, we're going to jump to this interview, talk about Mechaton with Wells Thompson. We'll see you all on the other side.
All right, everybody. I want you all to welcome a very special guest. Finally joining us on the show this week. Everybody welcome Wells Thompson.
Hello, hello.
Welcome, Wells.
Hey, Wells. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here.
We're not going to give you too much shit about it being your first time. We already did that off air, so that's not it's not valuable for anybody anymore.
You did prove us wrong. We had a bet going as whether you were a figment of Dalton's imagination or not.
It was just going to be Dalton and a blonde.
We just so paid. Oh man, I wish you guys planned that ahead of time. Dalton showing up. So our fans and viewers, if you're there for the Dalton Shannon interviews, this is Wells Thompson, the co-writer of Mechaton as well. But Wells, we got to do the annoying thing of putting you through the gauntlet and hearing your origin story in comics. Most importantly, like how you got to Mechaton, but. You know, how did it come about where you started, you wanted to write a comic, how that all came about for you?
Absolutely. So this comic is very tied into that because I didn't get into comics until I met Dalton in college.
Okay.
We met in like writing workshops and sort of quickly caught on that we were both really good at it. And also like that we complimented each other really well. If you've spent any time talking to Dalton, you know, he's great at banter. He loves to crack a joke. He's incredibly good with like building up characters and making them super likable. And I've always been very plot oriented, very sort of approached storytelling from a really literary style. So as he likes to say, I keep the wheels on the wagon. He makes it go as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. So we always kind of complimented each other really well. The way we got started with it is that Dalton has always wanted to do comics, whereas I always wanted to do novels and movies and such. And he, as being that's what he always wanted to do, he was constantly pumping out scripts. I would help him kind of edit them and sort of got a feel for it myself. He had this this graphic novel that he didn't know what to do with. And on a whim, I was just like, I really like the idea. Do you mind if I take a crack at it? And I rewrote it sort of in my own style. And we workshopped it back and forth until it was something we were both really happy with. And we realized that was a really fun and rewarding way to write stories. And that we had a lot of chemistry together. And then, shortly after that, we started doing short comics, which we eventually kind of compiled into an anthology to send into Dread. That was our first published work. And then after that, we decided to do an ongoing series, which was Mechaton. So, I don't have the typical, like, started reading comics as a kid. My first ever comic that I remember reading, and I'm sure I picked up, like, at some point I picked up a Punisher comic or something, just like a quick floppy and just didn't think anything of it. But my first big comic that I remember reading is Watchmen, which is a really strange one to start with.
Yeah. Yeah.
In terms of just like, yeah, what it's about is the superhero in comic book industry. And I didn't know anything about that.
That might've paved your way to be the writer you are now, because you said Dalton's side, he gets, really you know, gets it going as fast as possible. And you're, you're more plot oriented, right?
So yeah, and I think over time we've definitely influenced each other. I've gotten a lot better at banter and characters and dialogue. Mm-hmm. He's gotten a lot better at plotting, which is sort of the benefit of collaboration. You really learn to bring out the best in each other, and
right,
and can take that moving forward into your own projects. But yeah, my influences have always been like Kurt Vonnegut and F. Scott Fitzgerald, Ernest mm-hmm. Hemingway, Jennifer Egan, like contemporary American
yep.
like mm-hmm. titans of literature, not necessarily Grant Morrison, Brian Lee O'Malley, which are people I love now, but have never been like, you know, they weren't the people who made me want to do this, if that mm-hmm. makes sense.
If I can jump in, because I've had this debate going out at the comic shop for a while, which is like, you want to get your friend into comics, what's the book to give them? And then, you know, everybody always spouts out the obvious. They spout out Watchmen, they spout out Dark Knight Returns, and
Kingdom Come. Like that.
Yeah. And I always say those are three great books, but I would never hand those to a first timer, because I think Watchmen yeah. requires you to have knowledge of comics. I think Kingdom Come requires you to have knowledge of the DC universe.
For sure.
I think that Dark Knight Returns is a little bit easier, but still, like, you have to know Batman.
Yeah, you do need a little bit of background knowledge on Batman, which most people have sort of a background radiation on, but they're not going to get like the nuances of what that story is doing.
Yeah,
and Watchmen.
I think that's the top of the three, but yeah. I'm just curious. Watchmen being your first, kind of like, how did that affect the rest of your comics reading?
Yeah, Watchmen isn't a comic that I would hand to convince people to read more comics. Watchmen is just a great book.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah,
if you want to get people into comics, anything Brian Lee O'Malley, Scott Pilgrim series, yep. Seconds is actually probably better, because it's a self-contained book and it is brilliant in its own right. And mm-hmm. it really could only be done in comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, I in terms of like serialized floppy stuff, man,
that is tough. I mean,
I really like I tend to go for the indie stuff, so I don't mm-hmm. I almost never think of like superhero stuff to recommend. What I think is like The Many Lives of Layla Starr, and if you know they have really weird specific tastes, Coffinbound is a great one to introduce mm-hmm. people to.
Yep.
Yeah, you have to really know the person you're recommending it to, though.
Right.
But yeah, but if you wanted to like do something really traditional, Chip Zdarsky, Daredevil, I would say is a great one as like an introduction to what comics do. That's just mm-hmm. a really solid example of like a good, you know, maxi series.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
My answer varies depending on the person.
Like, yeah,
my
it
sister,
really is. Yeah,
my sister and I've been trying to get her to read Saga for years, because I think she would love it.
Saga's so good.
Yeah.
And then, but like, if you're into superheroes, I say Secret War, like the original Secret Wars, because it's a very easy, condensed superhero story with just a lot of fighting.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
But I guess,
you know, I think thinking on it, I think I would go for All-Star Superman as at least one of like the easy go-tos.
That's a good one. Yeah.
If you want, especially if you want like people into superhero comics and what they can do beyond just like, this is a fun punch up. Mm-hmm. Like that book has so much heart and so much, you know, I don't remember that book at all for like the action scenes or the weird set pieces.
Right.
I remember it for like, you know, Lois and Clark kissing on the moon. Like mm-hmm. it just has some really impactful moments that the medium sells really well. Plus Frank Quitely's art is so good.
It is really good. Yeah. That's really what got me into comics was that art. Yeah.
So at the end of the day, because my original question was kind of like, it didn't really deter you from reading comics though. Like,
no.
You read this thing and you still got into it. You just didn't get into like the mainstream.
Yeah, I and to this day, I'm still very much I'm more interested in what indie is doing. There are superheroes comics that are ongoing that I do pay attention to, like the Hot Girl miniseries that came out. I, you know, just like every other kid, the Batman and the Animated Series, JLU, that was sort mm-hmm. of my bread and butter introduction to superheroes. So Hot Girl has always been like my low-key favorite of that group. I've always wanted to read a comic with her, and the fact that she hasn't had her own until now is insane to me.
Yeah, it's wild.
So yeah, as soon as that was announced, I was like, I'm on board for this. I really, really want to read this. The Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy books are great. There's a bunch of really, really great books being put out right now. I've heard great things about Detective Comics, Ram V's Detective Comics, but mm-hmm. I have not had a chance to pick it up yet.
I'm a big fan of Ram V, but a lot of his stuff's very heavy. It's like not your typical.
It is. Yeah. It's different. But again, that's my like, I love.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like,
I first read, what did I first read from Ram V? It was either these Savage Shores or Layla Starr, but mm-hmm. either way, it was you read that and you're hooked on his style, yeah. and his eye for detail and just the very different perspective that he has.
Yeah, his Swamp Thing was pretty phenomenal that he was working on. All right, Wells, we'll get back to what you've been doing with Mechaton.
Sure.
And I want to say that, just to focus on that, but Chris and I talk about this quite a bit, especially with the Big Two and other comics, bringing fun back into mm-hmm. reading. Because, like, you know, it's like you said, it's a floppy. It's hard to just get somebody into like just a single issue of anything. But right. I would say with what you did with this first five issues of Mechaton, is each issue itself is it reminded me of like a Saturday morning cartoon style.
Yeah.
Kaiju story. I don't know if you want to elaborate on that at all, but I think every issue is fun in itself.
The inspiration for this was very much like getting home from school and turning on Toonami and mm-hmm. just like being barraged with, you know, old anime and like yep. weird weird niche cartoons.
Yep.
I think there's definitely an influence of like, you know, what's the next inexplicable, exciting thing that we're going to get to see? Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't want to go as far as like the strict episodic nature of something like Dragon Ball, where yeah. you have on the last episode of Dragon Ball Z, like everything that comes with that. But yeah, that as you said, kind of Saturday morning cartoon feel. This was very much an ode to the sort of media that we grew up with. Whether it's like Gurren Lagann or something not modern, but like Ben 10, something that was kind of concurrent with when I was growing up.
Yep.
It's just we wanted to appeal to that part of you that's still excited for the absurd,
mm-hmm.
and we wanted to make something that a 5-year-old could read and be excited about, or a 45-year-old could read and feel nostalgic and excited about, but still have that like sense of almost childlike wonder about like, oh, this is so cool. What's going to happen?
Right. Right.
You got me when you transformed a hot dog cart.
Yeah. That was sort of I'm like, what's the stupidest thing we can transform? I want to hit them. I want to hit them where it hurts right out the gate. And hot dog cart was what I landed on. And I'm extremely proud of that.
I was talking to Chris about the earlier the issue where you transform the cop car, and mm-hmm. he's like, oh, what kind of weapons can I find? And he just pulls out machine guns. He's like, no, the car just had machine
guns. It's like, yeah, that was just part of it.
No, that's not a new weapon. Like, the machine guns were on the car.
Yeah. That was sort of the joke with that one is you have to, you know, come up with improvised weaponry, like a cannon, an umbrella shield for the hot dog cart.
Yep.
And the police officers is just like already, or the police car is way decked out. Yeah. Like you don't need to dig at all for it.
It's just there. Yeah. No. I do like what you did with every issue, and I'm going to get to so there is an overarching plot. I mean, you kind of get that.
Yeah.
And we don't need to spoil too much, I guess. I mean, this is for the volume one coming out, but I would say that you kind of address it wrapping up in the fifth issue, right? We get to see more of that, or like the reason for the Mechaton being on Earth and all this stuff happening. And there's obviously a bigger story there, right? So that's kind of flushed out already.
We get little hints of kind of the bigger driving force of the plot at the very beginning of issue mm-hmm. one. That's why it starts off very like, why are we doing Star Wars? Like, it starts off very cosmic and like, and this space battle is going on, and then kind of reframes to being, you know, this weird little suburban, you know, great power, great responsibility kind of story. And the plot slowly drifts back toward that overarching like big bad villain and cosmic repercussions and stuff like that. But we wanted to start it off small to really get to know the characters and to, you know, tell a story that people can relate to kind of in their own communities before we jump onto, and now it's cosmic scale and planets are in the balance and things are getting really ridiculous.
Yeah. I think that makes sense, because I would say by the end of the fifth issue, like you said, the main characters are introduced. You have like this connection with them, kind of who the rotating cast really is going to be. And like, you know, the police force being involved, that banter between that group and the main group and stuff like that. So I guess let's talk about the Kickstarter. So the Kickstarter's running right now, right? And this would be the collected volume one of all five issues, correct? So,
absolutely. 108 completed pages and the cover gallery for the standard issue. So everything is already done. We're ready to print as soon as we get our funding for it.
Nice. And is there any additional stuff that we hadn't seen with the original issues that's going to be part of the graphic novel at all, or
We do have a kind of deluxe edition if you're a fan of the series, or if you just really want to consume all that like you can get of the series, you're really into it. We've got a deluxe edition that has back matter for days, you know, original character sketches, original sample pages from different artists that stepped away from the project. We've got a script that of like a very different version of Mechaton as like an interesting what if. There's page breakdowns, there's all sorts of stuff that really kind of lets you sink your teeth into what we're doing.
And the one thing you didn't mention there, which I'm a sucker for, is we do have a deluxe edition foil cover,
everybody. Absolutely. So yeah, if you like display covers, it's there for you. And it's from Comics Wellspring is the printer that we use, and the way they do foil covers is so gorgeous. That comes with heavier paper, glossier paper, so it really makes the colors pop. If you love cool display stuff, definitely take a look at that one.
And because it's shiny, that means it's worth more, everybody. So
that's true.
Speculator is going to
spend. It also doesn't like it doesn't chip off or anything like that. It's really we went to like very painstaking lengths to make sure that we got like the best paper quality and make sure that the experience was like solid from beginning to end.
I think I went on about this with Dalton, but I'm gonna bring you into my madness too. I think my favorite thing you guys have done is this print right here from Urjicuna.
I love that one.
It's so good, man.
Serge is someone I would love to work more with. We managed to get him on a story on Descent into Dread, which is just gorgeous. The way he went above and beyond our expectations for it. We already had that connection. We asked him to make something for Mechaton. And we sort of kicked ourselves for not using it as a cover because it is absolutely gorgeous, but maybe one day we'll circle back around to it. That's available as a 11x16 print as well as a 5x7 metal print.
Very cool.
Limited number of those. So yeah, if you want something really cool that won't break or bend.
That's the one.
Yep.
You could chuck it across the room. You'll be okay.
Absolutely.
You'll be okay. I don't know if the walls will be, but so right now you're at almost 2,200 out of 3,000. A little over 2 weeks to go. Probably about 2 weeks as we're talking now with this episode airs. But I would say I think you're hitting all the needs of like, okay, there's just a digital only version. We have just, you know, people missed out on the early birds already. If you missed out on the early birds, what the hell are you doing?
They hadn't heard this interview yet, Mike.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. They haven't. Yeah. We're in the future now. So,
and yeah, we do our best to try and reward repeat backers and people who are just really like into the, you know, who follow us from project to project. So we always have 20% off at the beginning of the campaign. So you might have missed it this campaign. Next campaign, you can always, you know, you can keep updated and snag it.
And I'll say another interesting thing you have on here is the annotated digital scripts of 1 through 5. I think that's really cool, especially for any aspiring writers. Can you talk about that a little bit?
For sure. Yeah, we wanted to have something available for digital backers that was a little bit more expansive than just like, because in terms of digital add-ons, there's not a ton that we can do. We can, you know, but we have these scripts available. And for people who are interested, we figured it would be nice to go in and sort of, you know, add in sort of as comments onto the script, like our decision-making process, the history of, you know, how we came to this scene or what, you know, or just how the page evolved that's different from the script or how impressed we were with the art. Just, you know, it's not like every single line has a comment on it, but it's basically like a small director's commentary with me and Dalton on the script. And it's a good companion piece for the book itself. Whether you're just a casual fan or especially, I think if you're interested in writing comics and you want to see how like the scripts break down and the difference between what's on the page and how it was originally kind of formatted.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a really cool idea. Cause we always try to talk about that a little bit here as well as just, you know, the comics and the media being put out, but the process and how that gets done. And we talked about it already, but I think it is a unique and interesting dynamic between having two writers, right? So you have the having the notes of like how you came about that, I think is pretty cool. So I would say I really enjoyed it. Do you want to say something, Chris?
I was gonna say if we're kind of before we wrap up everything, I had something I wanted to jump in with. So another series you guys do that I really, really loved is Frankenstein the Unconquered.
Yes.
And I know you guys, you're the artist, is Elizabeth doing the art on that?
Elizabeth Medetsky is the series artist. She's working on issues 3 and 4 as we speak.
So I know she had some issues, had an injury of some sort. Have you guys had any update on what's going on with that in case anyone out there is listening that is also a fan of it? And
last we heard from her, she was about to get the okay from her doctor. She's just been like making sure she's not going to cause worse damage by working with it. She said she's feeling really creatively starved and can't wait to work on it. And as soon as she gets the okay, she's going to be sketching out thumbnails for it. So
great.
I don't know. But given that she lives in Georgia, not the state, the country, we don't have like a constant line of communication. It usually takes a day or two to hear back. But as soon as we have like affirmative progress on that, we're going to let everyone know. We're going to show off some thumbnails and get moving forward.
Great.
That's
awesome.
I'll say that I remember when you guys were putting out the news of that through your updates, and I was bummed on a human level, like,
yeah, it really, and especially the timing of it sucked because it was like we the week that we funded was when it happened. Yeah. So it was like all this momentum has to just shut down. I'm sorry, everybody. It's been unfortunate timing, but we have a pretty understanding readership. And yeah, well, like I said, we're excited to be moving forward with it. We really want to be able to get those issues out there and do issue 5 before the end of the year, and maybe even fingers crossed a trade. That would be really nice, but we'll see. We'll see how much time we have for 2024.
Yeah.
How much of a damper does that put in your plans for 2024? Like you mentioned that the people come back for the next campaign, so I'm assuming you guys are doing more of something. Sure. Was the plan to go back and forth and do another Frankenstein originally, but now we have to kind of figure something else out?
We have other stuff in the works. So as much as we would have liked to go jump straight back into Frankenstein, we do have something that's we're ready to sub out, and hopefully we can get Frankenstein in the next one.
Cool.
But yeah, that'll just depend on how quickly we can get everything wrapped up. Yeah, no, it hasn't been too much of a damper, but obviously it means that it just takes a little bit more planning ahead, and we have to roll with the punches a little bit more.
Yeah, understood.
Kickstarter in general, if you're wondering, like, if you've never run a Kickstarter, you're just kind of vaguely aware of it. Generally, anything that's on Kickstarter right now was planned for like 3 to 6 months ago, maybe longer.
Yeah,
it takes a lot of effort to pump out one of these campaigns, and it's not as easy as just calling everyone up and being like, hey, do you want to do an issue 6? Let's go. All
right. Yeah. Right.
I know a few. I mean, obviously, we know a bunch of people in that space now, but I know a few that do like anywhere from 5 to 12 Kickstarters a year. And they have like spreadsheets of next 6 months or eight months.
You will go absolutely insane trying to keep it all in your head. You have to write it down.
Yeah.
And we would love to be in a space where we can do more. We're definitely working up toward that. We're not at 12 a year yet.
it's quite a few.
Maybe hopefully one day, who knows? But even if it's just like 4 or 5 campaigns a year that are really high quality that people are really excited for, we would be happy to do that. Mm-hmm. We would obviously love to be able to produce, multiple issues a year and keep people from having to wait, but that depends largely on how popular it is and how big audience, hunger for it is, enthusiasm for the projects are. Because we would love to be done with Mechaton. We would love to be on issue 11, grand finale of Mechaton right now. Unfortunately, we have to work day jobs and we have to plan very far in advance for our Kickstarters, and that's just a slow process in general. So the more attention the book gets, the faster we can produce it. Because we won't have to work day jobs anymore.
Yeah.
Right, so everybody hit that Kickstarter right now and pledge. Yeah.
Exactly.
And you set me up for my final question before we let you go today. Your plan for Mechaton. So there are additional issues and maybe a stopping point after a certain point.
So we have it. We don't. I never like to plan too far in advance.
Mm-hmm.
But we do our rough, kind of outline where we want the series to end up is currently 11 issues long. Mm-hmm. So these 5 plus the next arc would be 3 issues of 32 pages and then another 3 issues of 32 pages. Cool. Anything can happen. That plan is flexible, but that's where we see it right now. There's a definite end for like the story as we know it, but I think there is, if Mechaton were to get really popular, if people wanted more of that story, there's definitely room to expand. I always joke there's a, there's a version of Mechaton that's extremely monster of the week and episodic and doesn't have as much of an overarching plot.
Yep.
And if we could ever get to that point, that would be super fun to make. I would die happy if I could make just an issue of that a month forever.
Yep.
But yeah, for sure we want to tell these 3 arcs that were really that we sort of went into it knowing what we wanted to do. And then once we get to that point, we decide what Mechaton looks like in the future, whether it's done or whether it has a new kind of life to live.
Cool.
That reminds me of Kirkman talking about Walking Dead, and I think it was supposed to end at issue 100, but it was just like, I don't know, it's really popular, guys.
Probably should have ended.
So they just like extended out where it was supposed to end.
Yeah, and I don't want to confuse it with like not to say that The Walking Dead got bloated or anything, but I don't want to confuse it with like, yeah, we'll just be willing to pad out and bloat.
No, yeah, right. Yeah.
It's gonna end where it ends. And then if there's like a shelf life beyond that, then we'll take advantage of it. But like, you're not gonna be waiting for the final battle for 100+ issues.
Okay. All right.
I've never believed in padding my stories.
Yeah.
To my own detriment.
It's a little harder to do the zombie of the week with that storyline as well. So I don't know.
Yeah. And that had a definitive ending.
Yeah. Right.
As opposed to, I mean, I know you have an ending for the story, but like there could be another story after that for you. Like,
and that's
potentially.
And I wanted to say that about the first 5 issues was like, there was that overarching plot, but I like reading each issue, I did kind of get excited for like, this could be a monster mech of the week or something like that, which is cool.
And originally I think we did try and structure it where every issue was a new mech and a new monster. So there was just like something, you know, everything was a little bit more episodic, but we realized that it flowed a lot better and you cared a lot more about the characters in the story if it was a little bit looser. Mm-hmm. We still try and like hit nice set pieces and show off unique things that the glove can do. But you know, some of the mechs are like jokes essentially.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. Which just, I think adds to the flavor and the charm of the book. But we didn't want, you know, once it became obvious, like really through writing issue 2, like, oh, we're not going to be able to fit in this entire Thraxis house fight in one issue.
Right.
It became, we were just like, okay, well, we have to abandon the idea of like doing it super episodic, at least for right now. Maybe in the future we can make it a little bit more one big fight per issue or something. Like I said, for this first arc and the arcs that to follow, we have like an overarching story in mind, and we're focused on telling that more than trying to just pump out like trying to pump out a monster of the week essentially. Mm-hmm. I was gonna say new dumb ideas for X, but who are we kidding? We're always pushing new dumb ideas
for X. I wanted to say, and I don't know if you can answer this on air, we could talk after, but can you confirm if we get to see the gauntlet get off of Earth, like maybe see it used on a different planet or in a different other than Earth, or no?
My lips are tied.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
the answer is spectacular, but I can't tell you what it is.
I was reading it, I'm like, man, these things are really cool, like the hot dog car in the house, but I'm like, I really want to know what crazy shit's on other planets.
The truth is you're headed in the right direction.
Yeah, okay.
The truth is that we learned that the Earth is hollow.
Inside.
The Mechaton is what actually makes it. It implodes inside, and that's what gives us a flat Earth, bringing us to today's reality.
I don't like that ending, Chris.
You guys aren't flat earthers? I'm sorry. I'll leave.
Yeah, goodbye. That's an abrupt way to end it, too, though. Again, Wells, hey, thanks for being here today. We want to push everybody to the Kickstarter. It's happening right now, a couple weeks left, so go back the project. Chris and I are big fans of it. If our listeners and our viewers want to follow you and the cool stuff you're doing, where do you want to send them as far as social media and stuff?
Absolutely. For as long as it exists and continues to be barely functional, I'm on Twitter at Wells Thomp, which is my name minus the last 3 letters. Same with Blue Sky. The most reliable way to get updates is through my Substack. Through my newsletter on Substack called Comics, Cats, and Cocktails. And you can find a link to that on my website, wellsthompson.com. There you can also find links to Mechaton, Frankenstein, The Catskin and the Rose, and all the other stuff that I've worked on. Cool. You can potentially pick up a copy of there.
Great.
And as always, everybody, there'll be all those links in the show notes down below. So you can go down there, click on them, find out all the things that Wells and Dalton are doing together. And all that. So, Wells, thank you so much for taking the time today to come chat with us. And best of luck with the campaign, man.
Appreciate it. Yeah, no, thanks for having me on.
And we're back.
We're back. So Mechaton Volume 1's coming out. It's a great story. I mean, it's giant robots. They can change into we'll make robots out of everyday objects. The first volume's really good. It's like a Saturday morning style kaiju book is the way I describe it, but it's really good stuff. Comic news, Chris. So along with the movies, surprise, surprise, we have a new Deadpool Wolverine comic. It's a new limited comic. I love that cover, by the way. The series will be titled Deadpool Wolverine World War III. It'll be written by Joe Kelly, Adam Kubert on the art. That's why the art's amazing. This comic will have a duo team up and try to prevent the villain Delta from starting World War III. Interesting.
Yeah, and it's Joe Kelly's triumphant return to Deadpool. Like, yeah. He's for Deadpool fans, from what I know, he's the guy like that kind of started it all. Like, mm-hmm. everyone wants to give Rob Liefeld for credit for it. Like,
yeah,
he drew a cool picture. He didn't create the backstory,
right?
From what I know, that Joe Kelly actually is the one that like transformed him into this character.
Mm-hmm.
So I give him, he gets to be Deadpool daddy, not more than anybody else. I
forgot about that. Thank you. Thanks for reminding me of that awful title. Oh my God.
So yeah, for those fans, I'm really excited that they get that back. And Joe Kubert, who's a fucking amazing artist.
Andy Kubert.
Sorry. There's so many Kuberts out there.
Adam Kubert. we're both wrong.
Adam Kubert. It's a Kubert, everybody. It's good art.
It's a like,
it doesn't matter. he probably went to the Kubert School of Art, too.
Probably.
all that said, really excited for those fans. I hope they really enjoy it. No fucking way I'm reading this.
Yeah. <I'm> Good for you guys. Probably not reading it. It's all right.
Mostly because of all the other announcements we're about to talk about and how my wallet. I'm going to need a second job.
Yep. So let's get into it. Marvel's next event, Blood Hunt. Interesting that they're going with vampires. We already talked about that. Is ramping up, and they announced a ton of tie-in titles to go alongside it. Here we go. Dracula Blood Hunt, written by Danny Lore, with art by Vincenzo Corrado. The series will feature both Dracula and Bloodline, Blade's daughter. So there we have the cover for that one.
First time we've gotten a Dracula book in, I think, 50 years. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
So that's pretty cool.
Mike, you'll be shocked to know that I'm buying the fuck out of this.
Oh, hell yeah. I know.
Let me just cut. This event is going to drain my wallet.
Yeah.
It's insane how good the books sound.
This is more exciting for you than the last vampire series we had with DC.
Yeah.
And hopefully they don't pull any punches like DC didn't. I mean, DC put a guy in a blender, if you remember.
We didn't talk about it. This is the first Marvel book to get a mature readers tag, okay. I believe, ever.
Okay, well then there we go. That's what we need.
So yeah,
they're like, DC did it, why can't we?
Well, so even DC, I don't think in their main line does it. I don't quote me on that.
I don't know what they put, but I mean, people in their books have been getting killed and shot and.
Yeah, but there's, you know how like with movies, there's E for everybody, and then
I don't R-rated. Know what it says on their line. I think it always says.
So teen. Comics has the same thing, the same kind of scale, and I don't think either company has gone above like teen for their main line.
Yeah,
and this is the first to go, at least at Marvel, to go mature. Now DC's done mature superhero books. That's what Black Label is,
right?
But those aren't mainline continuity books. So that's why, to add another layer to my excitement for this.
But Black Panther Blood Hunt, written by Cheryl Lynn Eaton, art by Fareed Karami. The series will recently see the exiled T'Challa as he returns to Wakanda as a vampire. That is a sick cover.
That cover is so fucking
good. That is a really, it's a vampire. It's a. So, Chris, I think I know why they show the mouth now with the.
Well, that was Ultimate.
Yeah,
Black Panther. So we were talking about how we don't mainline.
We don't talk about seeing the mouth with the new suit, but this is like, those fangs are huge. They're like panther fangs.
Yeah, I have a feeling that, this Black Panther is going to just rip that part off.
Cause yeah, and feed. Just eat everybody. Very cool.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I will probably pick it up.
Notice how Chris says, sounds awesome. All they said is Vampire Black Panther goes back to Wakanda.
That's all I need.
That's all you need. I know.
That's all I need.
He's going to murder everybody. Midnight Sun's Blood Hunt, written by Brian Hill, art by German Peralta. Oh, okay. So we have Blade versus... Why am I drawing a blade?
Ghost Rider.
Thank you.
Yeah, the Midnight Sun's team up has always been not one of my favorites, but I usually check it out because I like Blade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a good chance the new Moon Knight jumps in on this. I'm sure we'll see like Elsa Bloodstone, a few others. But dude, Brian Hill is doing the Blade book, and I love that book.
Yeah, that book's it's really good.
I'll be getting this because it's probably continuing his Blade story.
Yeah. Yeah, because that definitely looks like the Blade from the story. Union Jack the Ripper Blood Hunt, written by Kevin Scott, art by Kev Walker. As the title implies, this series will see the hero Union Jack return as a vampire hunter. There he is with the spade in one hand and the silver dagger in the other. Yeah, Union Jack the Ripper. That's a pretty fun play on the character, I think.
That's great. And to see Kevin Scott get a shot at something.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool.
Makes me happy. Yeah, I'm in on all of this, Mike.
Yeah,
I'm in. Yeah. I'm in. Union Jack, Captain Britain. I always enjoy those characters when they pop up. So let's do it.
There are also many more coming alongside these, as well as unannounced one-shots. Oh, nice. Also, you can expect the events of Blood Hunt will spill over into the main comics lines. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, Mike, so when you get your Fantastic Four issue 21-22, you can expect a tie-in story.
Oh, boy. Series tie-ins. Yep, it's Fantastic Four. There it is. Yeah. Is it still an Alex Ross cover, too? That'll be even better if it is. It looks like it from here. Oh, yeah.
We're zooming in.
Enhance.
That is for sure an Alex Ross cover.
That is an Alex Ross cover of the Fantastic Four fighting vampires. My God.
Yeah, so like the Amazing Spider-Man, Morbius is coming back.
Yep.
I didn't see much about the Avengers, Doctor Strange. Of course, Moon Knight's a part of it. Like, that's his thing, is fighting vampires. Interesting to see what Venom has to say. So Blood Hunt, Amazing Spider-Man, or Morbius is coming back, which I assume is tying into the main book here. Wolverine's got his own book. I mean, I'll probably pick that up because Wolverine fighting vampires. Does he get the bone claws back? Like, what does he do?
Yeah.
Strange Academy, no thank you. And then just a book called Blood Hunters. And I see...
is that Hawkeye?
Hawkeye and...
White Widow?
I'm zoning on her name. But and then I believe that's Werewolf by Night.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I am so excited for this event, man.
Literally every book is part of it. That's wild.
It's so crazy. Like, I've read almost every event that both companies have done since I started reading comics. Like, I love event comics, but I usually don't get in on all the side stuff unless the event really pulls me in.
Mm-hmm.
A la Secret Wars, Night Terrors, stuff like that. This might be one of them.
Starting with Free Comic Book Day tie-in.
Yeah. If that Free Comic Book, that Free Comic Book Day tie-in better be good.
Yeah.
Because if that's a stinker, that might turn me off to the whole thing.
Yeah. Please don't be a stinker.
I mean, it's up to you, Marvel, if you want money or not. But we still have 1, 2, 3, 6 one-shots to announce on top of this.
Yeah.
So cool. I'll have my eyes out on what's going on with this.
Yeah. A lot of vampire books. Chris is happy.
Yes.
Awesome. So here's some interesting stuff. There's been a lot of speculation from multiple sources. It was officially announced that Marvel and DC are teaming up to reprint the legendary crossovers of DC versus Marvel and Amalgam. They're they're being reprinted as omnibuses and available August of this year. That's huge because we never got them to agree on anything. So the whole line is going to include Batman, Captain America, number one, Batman, Daredevil, Batman, Punisher, Lake of Fire, Batman, Spider-Man, Daredevil, Batman, DC Special Series, number 27. So they're all the Versus books, like Darkseid versus Galactus, The Hunger, Green Lantern versus Silver Surfer, Hulk versus Superman, Marvel and DC present Uncanny X-Men and the New Teen Titans, Marvel Treasury Edition 28, Punisher, Batman, Silver Surfer, Superman, Spider-Man, and it's like everybody versus Batman, Spider-Man and Batman, Superman versus the Amazing Spider-Man, Superman versus Fantastic Four. And then there's a whole bunch of smaller miniseries. The Amalgam Age Omnibus collects DC versus Marvel 1 through 4, which is a great series. DC Marvel All Access 1 through 4, Unlimited Access 1 through 4, Bat Thing. Oh, these are all the crossovers of Bat Thing, Bruce Wayne, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., Bullets and Bracelets, Challengers of the Fantastic, Doctor Strange Fate, which is the Doctor Strange, Doctor Fate. This is amazing. Iron Lantern, Legends of the Dark Claw, Lobo the Duck, Speed Demon, Spider-Boy, Super Soldier, Thorian of the New Asgods, X-Patrol, and more, plus a treasure trove of behind-the-scenes material. That's awesome. These are going to be very sought after, for sure.
Yeah. I filed this all week as it was being like talked about, and there was all these like the scuttle around because somebody in a private group asked if anybody had like some of their old art because they'd sold away a lot of it that they could borrow to use for something. And then people started putting that together being like, you're talking about the DC versus Marvel stuff.
Right.
And that led to speculation. And then somebody leaked that it was coming. And then I don't know who came, but somebody came out between Marvel and DC and just said, it's happening.
Yeah.
We're putting this all back out. Mike, I had promised myself when Rom was done, I was going to put an end to my omnibus spending.
Yeah, this one has
promise is broken.
Yeah, I might have to get this. This is amazing.
So everybody out there, this is going to be at least $300 between these two books.
Oh, yeah.
So save up your ducats now.
Yep.
It's so amazing to me that they finally came together to do this. I kind of hope, I want this to be successful because I hope that they'll go back and do the Justice League versus Avengers series and some of the other ones. As far as what I've read in this, I've read all of Amalgam. I love those books. They're so much fun. I've never read the DC versus Marvel stuff, though. Like all the crossover books.
Yep, yep.
Those so are cool. I will be really into doing that.
Yeah, this is exciting stuff. I can't believe they settled on something.
This is probably the biggest news in like close to a decade. Like the fact that they're willing to come together just to reprint says something.
Yeah, that is wild.
Yeah.
They probably just need money, both of them.
I wonder because I guarantee they lose money on this too.
I don't even know because you can't imagine they're going to sell that many to really turn a huge profit, especially if they're splitting it.
No, but I did talk to a few people in the retailer world, and I do think that sold to retailers, this will do really well because a lot of retailers are going to go hard on their order because they're thinking what I'm thinking, which is this will never happen again.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's never going to happen.
So stock up now. And even if you don't sell it right away, over time, you will sell these.
Yeah.
And who knows? I mean, maybe in a year or two, they go up in price too.
Yep. Speculator.
Yeah.
Nice. No, this is really exciting. I might have to get both of these as well.
Hey, I'm beyond excited.
Dynamite Comics announced the next title in the lineup of Hanna-Barbera Comics will be Space Ghost. This was crazy, this announcement this week. The new title will be written by David Popoze, with art by Jonathan Lau, and be released in May. I'm so upset we didn't talk to David about this when he was on the show, but he couldn't talk about it, so we'll have to have him back.
Yeah, this is the thing he was like, I can't talk about.
Yeah, and honestly, Chris, if you would ask me, oh, it's Space Ghost, I would have never guessed it was Space Ghost.
Never in a million years.
This would be the last thing I would have guessed.
Genuinely stunned when I saw this.
Yeah, but I'm so excited for it.
It's awesome, dude. Like,
I love Space Ghost.
of the Hanna-Barbera stuff, like, I obviously I want Jetsons because I'm a huge Jetsons fan, but like Space Ghost is up there.
Yeah.
Kudos to Dynamite for doing it. And good for Pose for getting it, man. Like, I'm really excited to get my hands on this book. I gotta get a hold of somebody at PR
and
get it early.
And I'm sure he's very relieved to have such a less controversial book to be working on than Punisher. I don't know how controversial. I don't know how fans are of Space Ghost versus Punisher.
So I don't think he got a lot of shit for Punisher, but other than like the people who are like, I want Frank Castle,
right?
But I would be shocked if this one's just as controversial because that's a hardcore fan base.
Yeah, you do have a hardcore Hanna-Barbera fan base too.
I think what he's excited for is I'm pretty sure this is ongoing.
Oh, nice.
So maybe he can sit on a title for a while and not have to constantly hunt for a new one because all of his books are
like miniseries.
Yeah. And even Savage Avengers was supposed to be ongoing, but then obviously had a finale to it. So,
yeah, this is exciting stuff. Good for him. Yeah. Archie Comics announced a new edition of their long running horror line of comics titled Archie Judgment Day. This title will be written by Aubrey Sitterson with art by Megan Hutchinson. Judgment Day will see Archie and the gang on a quest to cleanse Riverdale from an invasion of demons. That art is pretty fantastic. Not my cup of tea, though. For sure. No. I'm not a huge Archie fan. I just don't care. I don't know.
I like the Archie horror stuff.
Yeah.
Because it plays with Archie, but it's not Archie.
Yeah. Okay, I get that.
You know... I forget what it's called, but the zombie book they did, if you've never tried it, I would really recommend trying it.
Okay.
This will be cool to check out. We'll see. Like with any horror stuff, it's dependent on what kind of horror it is and where it leans for me. I'm much more picky about my horror.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you'd enjoy this cover a little bit more.
I did love, oh God, why are you bastard? It's a Jai Lee cover, everybody. Everybody knows how much I love Jai Lee. Oh my God. What the hell? Why are their quads thinner than their calves? Do you see that? The quad muscle is thinner than the calf. That makes no sense. None of that makes any sense. The anatomy is just lost to Jai Lee, I believe.
Dude, I was put away by Before Watchmen stuff, and that was his Ozymandias book, and I was like flipping through it real quick, and I was like, man, I love this book. This is some good Jai Lee art. I was gonna send it to you, but I didn't want to piss you off.
No. What's going on with the fingers? Anyways, I mean,
this looks like a cool book at the end of the day. I'm glad to see Archie Comics going back to horror. They need to like really find a groove, get out of these one shots, get out of like, I'm sure the Archie regular stuff does well enough for them. Mm-hmm. Obviously they're still in business, but I'd like to see them jump out and do different stuff. And Archie horror was one of those things that for a minute there, they were really big on.
Yeah. And, that's cool. Good for them. Yeah. Mad Cave doing some stuff. Announced another new title called Mugshots. Series will be written by Jordan Thomas, art by Chris Matthews, Brighton, United Kingdom, 2008. The kidnapping of a young woman starts a chain of events that will set con artists, gangsters, killers, and corrupt police on a collision course of violence. Meet John Bannon, self-proclaimed bastard and loving uncle, and this tale of family trauma, betrayal, murder, and revenge that threatens to bring the city's whole underworld down. It looks like very much like a James Bond-esque book. James Bond / Departed, almost.
Yeah.
Looks pretty cool.
Right, Mad Cave alley. Wants my attention, man.
Yeah, Chris is very interested.
I'm down. Yeah. We'll talk about Mad Cave book in a little bit, but like, I like what Mad Cave's doing, man.
Yeah,
like,
they're doing some cool stuff,
and they're really going hard in that crime section of the audience, which I fit right in. So,
yeah, that's some cool art they have for those books too.
Yeah.
Magma Comics, Magma. Announced the next title to be released by the publisher. Sorry, Magma. I just can't. Magma. I love Austin Powers. By the publisher following its initial lineup called The Scale Trade. The series will be written by Steve Orlando, art by Megan Huang. In a modern day world, one step removed from our own, dragons are highly respected and highly endangered species. but poaching is an existential threat. When a young idealist joins a federal agency tasked with managing dragon populations, he quickly discovers the entire system is corrupt. Shocking. After seeing firsthand the cruelty of the system, our newly radicalized dragon savior takes matters into his own hands. Interesting. So, yeah, it's, you know, you take out rhinos, you put in dragons, and voila. The art's very cool for some of these. I am a huge dragon fan, so this might be something I check out.
Yeah, it's. Yeah. I'm not usually a Steve Orlando fan, but this sounds like a cool book.
And so. That art with the Sphinx and that giant dragon is amazing.
I like... So I think this one's my favorite.
Yeah, that one's really cool.
But I even think the cover A like is okay as well.
I think they're trying to do Jurassic Park there.
Yeah, a little bit.
With what's his name? Chris Pratt is the vibe I get. Yeah.
But it sounds like a cool book. And like I kind of want to dig deeper into Magma comics to see because like they come out of nowhere and now it's like, bam, we got this big, like, we're gonna put out comics and everything.
Yeah.
And then we're like, we got the Hive Mind, and round two we got Steve Orlando. Like, what's round three? Fucking Hickman? Like,
yeah, who are they pulling?
Where are these people coming from?
Yeah.
But I mean, so far they've announced three books, and they all sound interesting to me.
I have to admit, it's probably very tough for someone to go to a publisher and be like, "Hey, I want to write a dragon exploitation book." You know, so I think very few people would take a risk like that, but it does sound interesting to me.
It seems to me like they're going this route. Like, they're obviously going kind of genre with what they're doing, but it almost reminds me of what Aftershock was doing in the beginning. And I'm reminded of the story that Colin Bunn told us, where he was like, I had a book of pitches, and I said, just pick one and we'll do it. And they picked one, and it was like all the evil creatures on their arc of their own during Moses' story.
Yeah.
And he was like, that was the one I'm like, nobody will ever do. I just thought it was fun, and they picked it.
Yeah.
That's what these are reminding me of, man. Mm-hmm. Like, they're picking the ones that nobody else would do. Like, let's just take shots on like crazy stories that.
Yeah. It sounds cool.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm down.
I like giant dragons. People running in terror. Why not? And with that, I guess we'll talk about what we read this week, Chris.
Yeah, I read some comics.
As far as mainstream stuff, I had a couple, but I read all five issues of Mechaton this week, so there's five comics right there. I had a lot of fun reading those five issues. Highly recommend those. Like I said, it's like a fun Saturday morning kaiju beat him up story. I mean, this kid finds a gauntlet that he can use to transform anything into a mech suit and fight with it. And we get this amazing like final battle between a guy who's transformed with like nuclear pizza, like turns into a giant cheese monster. And then we get this one of the issues, he turns a house into a mech suit, and the chimney is like a cannon over his back. It's sick.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah, there's just a lot of fun stuff happening. So the funny thing is, like, when he's changing into mech suits, different parts, like the first thing's a hot dog cart. So like different parts of the items will interact to make weapons. And he's always like, I wonder what weapons so I can do now. So he transforms a cop car, and he's like, oh, what weapons do I have now? And he like opens his arms, and there's just giant machine guns. They go, no, that's not a transformation. The car just has giant machine guns. He's like, where is the tax money going? Like, why do the cop cars have giant machine guns attached to them? It's just a fun book. There is an overarching plot of like this weapon came from space, and the person like wants it back and like hid it on Earth. So that's an overarching story. So this first five issues is just a lot of fun. We meet the people that have the item on Earth, what they're doing, where they're positioned in their lives, and how he's become like a popular person within his own town, like saving people. Really a lot of fun. Okay. So the two books I read this week, Chris, I didn't read Batman 143 yet. Did not read it yet. Okay. We weren't very excited about Batman 142. So I said to myself, Chris, what book should I read that probably won't have Joker in it this week? Well, no, I did not read that one.
Oh.
But I read Action Comics 1062.
Oh.
By Aaron Timms. Because I jumped on when Aaron started writing Action Comics. I really liked his Bizarro story. The issue was fantastic. It was like Superman struggling with trying to save the humans, and everybody's Bizarro, so they're like shouting at him, and like it almost was like kind of very real in the sense that like people are shitting on Superman for being such a good person. They're like, no, you like this is, you know, you're, they kept calling him a fascist and stuff like that. It was pretty interesting. Did you read this book?
No, it's oh, literally like the next book on my pile is gonna okay read.
So the joke is, Chris, because I didn't want Joker in my book, everybody's been turned into the Bizarro form. And there's even a point where like he's going, like Bizarro is in Superman's head and he just wants to like kill all the citizens of Metropolis. And they're like, please kill us and all this shit. So he needs to go to somebody for help. And because everybody's the opposite of themselves, he decides to go to Gotham and get help from the Joker. Because now that everybody's crazy, the only one that's not crazy is the Joker. So he ends up going to Gotham, and we see Joker. He's like this really dapper, like normal looking man. And he's like, I need your help. And I was like, God damn it. It's literally like the last page. I was like, you just had to ruin my Bizarro story for me. I mean, it's not as, no, I understand. I think Jason Aaron's doing a great job with these last couple issues. It was just like a funny joke to myself. And I thought you were going to get kick out of it because I was like, I needed a break from the Joker. I was reading some fun stuff this week and then that popped up and I was like, well, I guess it's not really the same Joker, but I have a feeling he's going to do some Joker-esque things when we see it. So,
so I just want to cut in real quick because it goes along with your joke.
Yeah.
Batman City of Madness number 3, which is the final issue.
Is there a Joker in there?
Joker shows up on the last panel.
Dude, 3 fucking books this week with the Joker. Are you joking with me? I wish I was punning there, but so no matter what DC, I honestly should have went with Wesley Dodd's Sandman because there probably wouldn't have been a Joker in that book.
It's but, so most of this book is like them getting the origin of the alternate Batman, the Cthulhu okay Batman, if you will, yep, like how he comes about. We get to learn more about like all the different villains and the upside down Gotham okay and all that. If you have not read Batman City Madness, please, please read this book. It's so
amazing comics.
Good. Yeah. And the ending is so satisfying. 3 issues done. I really yeah can't recommend this book enough. But yeah, right at the end, like he's doing the soliloquy and like kind of wrapping up the story. And there's Joker in like the classic hat from 89 Batman.
Okay, that's fine though.
Yeah.
I don't mind that.
And I laughed because I was, when you were saying that, because I'm like, I feel like that's what he was going to talk about. I didn't think you'd pop up in Action Comics.
Dude, me either. You would have thought, like, Bizarro story. Yeah, but I will say, no, I'm really liking Jason Aaron's Superman writing. And
yeah, it's literally the next book on my pile to read.
You're going
to
really like it.
Yeah.
And then I had the last book I had this week was the Creepshow one-shot that I was really excited for. It was Joe Hill's Wolverton Station. And you would really like this issue, Chris. It's all about werewolves.
Ooh.
It's a one-shot story about this guy. He's like a rich art collector. And I've never really watched many werewolf movies. I don't know if this is from a specific movie, but someone calls him up, a collector, and says, I have this rare like wolf head cane from a specific wolf werewolf movie. But I don't know if it's like Werewolf in London. I don't know. But anyway, so he goes, okay, well, he's a really rich guy. And this guy that called him like owns like the automobile service and everybody's striking. So the guy's like, you have to take a train to get to me, blah, blah, blah. Well, he takes this train to Wolverton Station. And on the train, there's like different cars and different like levels of werewolves. So there's like werewolves eating people. Then he meets like this rich one in the front and who's like a little more sophisticated. And but this guy's like an asshole through the whole issue. So like by the end of it, he gets to the area where he goes to find this cane and the whole town is werewolves. And he gets like eaten at the end. But it was just like a great story of like this, like a Ebenezer Scrooge type character like avoiding all these werewolves, and he's just like an asshole to the cab driver, and the cab driver at the end ends up being a werewolf, and so like all the people in the local town are too, so they just like fucking kill him. But it was a great, Joe Hill's a great writer. And I would say this one's not so much horror, but it is pretty gory because it's werewolves like eating people and shit.
It's a classic horror.
Yeah. So it was a really good read for sure. The Creepshow stuff has been really good these last couple of years. But that's all I got to this week. I still haven't read Wesley Dodds or any of the Batman stuff.
So you didn't read Outsiders number 4?
Did not. Nope.
My least favorite issue.
Oh, well, good to know.
So we get this character who, we get her whole backstory where she was born during Y2K. And for the children out there, Google it. I'm not explaining it to you. but she has this power where like her emotions affect the world or some shit. So she goes and becomes like a monk, or I don't know. She goes off the grid and it's just like, I need to control myself because she sees that her emotions are affecting everything. And then where the book kind of takes place in present, she comes back to London. And so the team has to go find her and figure things out. They chase this girl around for a few panels. Drummer has a conversation with her and they let her go.
Oh.
That was it.
Really?
I didn't think it was a very good issue, personally. Okay. Which kind of stinks because the rest of it's been so surprisingly good.
Right.
That, yeah. And I was reading that this was an Authority character. I've never read the Authority, so
they're definitely getting pressured to put Authority characters and stuff because of the movies.
Yeah, so we'll see. But yeah, don't jump on this as your first Outsiders issue. Like, go back to the first one.
Yeah, start at the beginning.
Mike, I did read Batman 143.
Uh-huh.
This issue is definitely better. Like, that guy who's trying to train Joker. And he's the one that trained Batman to have the Zurnar.
Okay.
Batman. Mm-hmm. So his whole thing is to basically train Joker, not just to be like pure chaos, but to have these different personalities to pull out at different times to fight against Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And what was really cool about that is they show the different ones and then they design the character differently for each one. So like, you see the Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo Joker, not the one with the face stretched back, the one with the fucking hair slicked back.
Yep.
You see like classic Joker and all that. So it explains like the different, why Joker can be different things a long time. It's because he's accessing these different personalities. So when you really go back and look at like all the Batman comics, you're like, oh, like he was accessing different personalities like Zurnar mm-hmm. was and all that. I still don't know if it's the future or modern day, but the, let's just say the modern day stuff where like everybody's Joker
mm-hmm.
and all this is not great. I don't understand really what's going on other than like everybody's a Joker and they go to the police station and the Bat family's a Joker. So he's got to fight them. And there's a lot of Christian imagery throughout this with like Joker coming out of the water with like the big, robe on, walking across it, him on a cross, like very confused on what the fuck's going on here. But it all happened.
Yeah, I just don't know. It is a really big speed bump in the Batman.
Listen, one more week and then we go back. Next week the last issue of this comes out and then we move on to the regular.
Yeah.
But it was better than the last issue. I just think that he's wasting his time with the modern day stuff. He should have mm-hmm. stuck with the year one story because that did start to gain momentum in this issue and then was just railroaded by this like modern day thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Sticking with DC, Mike, the Sinister Sons.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't see this announcement, but when I saw it in previews, you know, I pre-ordered it.
Yeah, I didn't see it either.
So this is Tomasi coming back to do basically the opposite of the Super Sons.
Oh, that's
so
amazing.
It's the son of General Zod and the son of Sinestro.
Oh man, I love that.
And the son of Sinestro doesn't really know whether he's actually the son of Sinestro yet. He has this whole plan to figure it out. And in that time, apparently, so there's that book coming out right now, Kneel Before Zod.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently that's where the son of Zod comes from.
Okay.
And he's been told to like leave the planet and go do something else because he's like too rambunctious or some shit. And that leads him to go to this planet where Son of Sinestro is. And they end up clashing. Zod's kid just says, goes down there and takes over and says, this is my planet now. While that's happening, Sinestro's kid steals his ship to try to get off planet. And then it ends with Zod's kid like going to the ship. You know, what the fuck you doing?
Yeah.
I love this issue. Love it. It has that same feel of Super Sons, but just with a villain twist on it. So it gives it like new life.
That's cool.
Yeah. If you like Super Sons, pick up Sinister Sons.
Yeah, I didn't even know about that. I'm putting it on my list.
Vengeance of the Moon Knight, number 2. This issue is basically them telling you, it's 20 pages of them telling you it's not Mark Spector. Like, a lot happens. Like, he comes in, he's going to take over the moon mission. There's a big fight scene. Tigra has this whole thing where she's talking about, like, how she knows and her past and everything. And then in the end, this new Moon Knight comes up and is just like, well, I'll be back and we'll figure this out later, and disappears. And we get to see he has some different powers too. Like, he's able to suck all the light out of a room, and then the only light source is his emblems on his chest and face.
Mm.
Even Tigra, who has night vision, Mike, D&D, who can see at night, she could see nothing because it was complete darkness.
Dark vision.
Yeah. So it was a good issue, but I'm very interested to see who they are going to have be Moon Knight, because I was for sure thinking it was Mark Spector.
Yeah.
Weatherman Volume 3, number 2. This is them really picking up where the last volume left off. So Ian's decided he's going to infiltrate his old gang. Mm-hmm. And to do that, he basically has to re-access his old personality again. So they put him through all these tests and force him to do things like kill animals and then kill a person to flip that switch back on.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is when that happens, Ian's the one that agreed. The other personality didn't. So they're not sure if this is going to work.
Oh, true. Yeah.
So they're constantly monitoring him. Then when they get down, he gets down there and he meets with his old crew. Things kind of go sideways, and he makes the decision. Well, we're led to believe he makes the decision that he's going to just join them and finish what they started, because they try to just bomb him. And when they find the rubble, all they find is the chip they implanted in him and no bodies. So they're like, shit, he's gone rogue.
Oh boy.
So really good issue. And then my last book from this week, and then I have a review book to talk about, but Blue Book 1947 number 1 came out.
Mm-hmm.
And this is basically the story of the original UFO sighting in June of 1947, where Kenneth Arnold saw flying saucers in his airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And it really just goes through those events. Like, he saw it, and then other people in the area started to come out and say that they saw it. And that's how they came up with the name Flying Saucer. Mm-hmm. And if you've heard a UFO story, this is the basis, the first one to ever come about. So I really enjoyed it.
Interesting.
And then I got to look up real quick. So I'm going to vamp. But I got to see.
It was a review book that we got.
Yes, I got to see the release date for this book I can let you all know when it's coming out. We'll find. That's volume 1, Mike. That's not the one I want.
No, you want the...
All right, so I'm about to review Dick Tracy number 1.
Nice.
Coming April 24th. Can't get into spoilers because it's a review book, and the publisher asked very politely, please don't spoil this book. But I'll say I'm putting out a full review on my Substack, so go to chriscomicscorner.substack.com and check that out. It's really good. it's a crime book. It's a cop book, a detective book. It yep. takes place in the '40s. We got this guy, Dick Tracy, who wears a yellow suit and is like a genius level detective. In the first couple of pages, you see what happens. Like, people just get gunned down in this diner and he's brought in to figure it out. Anything after that, I won't discuss, but I'll say great art. The story's good enough. Like, there's some stuff missing. Like, I've never read a Dick Tracy anything, Mike. I don't know
if right. you have. Yeah, no, I know nothing about the character, no.
But one of the things I heard about him is that he has, like, James Bond-level gadgets.
Okay.
I didn't see any of that in this issue, but, I mean, they're trying to introduce you to the characters, bring into the world, so I'm sure right. those are coming. It is very adult, very violent, and very well written, and the art is amazing.
Nice.
I think Mad Cave has a winner on their hands here if they keep up this quality level. So if you like that style of book, check it out. And I think Mad Cave is doing cool things. So
no, they're doing a lot of good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. But if you want more in depth, like I said, go to that Substack and read about it.
Nice.
So Mike, that was everything I read this week. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Fortress Ricker on Twitter. Where can they find you and or the show?
You can find me at Fortress Chris on most social media networks, including X and Blue Sky and all that bullshit. And you can find the show at Fortress Comics _. Right now, just on X, but a lot of them have opened up to out of beta. So I might create more for the show to mm-hmm. go out there. We'll see. I don't have much time for social media, Mike.
Yeah, me either.
And also FortressComicNews.com. And if you want to support the show, remember, like, subscribe, share, comment down below on the YouTube version. If you're a podcast listener, 5-star reviews help a lot. So take time to go do that. And there's always patreon.com/fortresscomics. And then for me, as I said earlier, chriscomicscorner.substack.com. So thank you all so much for watching and or listening this week. We'll see y'all here next week.